so we're in a series called A Reed and the Wind. And so it's all about, there's a story, or there's a time when Jesus is talking about John the Baptist. And John the Baptist had been afraid. And so, I'm sorry, this is making.
Oh.
It's not you.
This. Is that not the right one?
No, it's the right one. It's just making funny noises. So.
I'll hold it very straight.
Yeah, okay. No, it's yeah.
Unless my hands start shaking.
You'll be fine. I think it's the moving the fingers and stuff. So it's just, it's yeah, it's, anyway. So Jesus is talking about John the Baptist, and he's making a point to the people there, because John was showing doubt and all that, and he's saying, but what'd you go out to see? You know, a reed shaking in the wind, like tall grass, basically, just blowing in the wind. Is that what you went out to see? He's like, no. And so for you and me, we've related that to the fact that the Lord never called us to be a reed shaking in the wind. You know, the wind of public opinion, the wind of circumstances just tossing us around. No. In fact, by the Lord's work in our lives, it is His desire that we become the wind, that He uses us as the wind to move others. And so this is kind of what we're going to be talking about today. So it fits right in into today. So today what we're going to be talking about is, so Jason, my wife, she for the last 2 years has gone to Mexico, all right, to go on a mission trip. And I went the year before. And so it's been interesting. We've gone there to serve the, well, we'll talk about what specifically what she had done. But God's really just done a cool thing, I think, in our lives. And for me, we're all about beyond the walls, you know. And so she went far beyond the walls, you know. And so we're going to have a little bit of conversation about her trip, or both of her trips, actually. All right, so first thing I want to ask is, did you ever think that you'd ever do something like that? It's a mission trip, basically, far southern Mexico.
I think I thought about liking to do something like that because I like to do new things. I like adventure. I like, you know, excitement, that kind of stuff. But I think a lot of it, I didn't think the means to do it, to get there, to leave the family for a week, you know, being a stay-at-home mom, it was a lot of organization and logistics to do that. So I think I thought I wanted to, I just didn't ever see how it was going to be possible.
All right. And so let's talk about how going to Mexico even happened in the first place. It was a long process.
It was kind of a long process and very funny. So my dad retired in 2013 for 35 years as a city attorney, and he wanted to do something with his retirement, but I can remember my whole life that he would say, there's plenty of people to serve here. I'm surely not going out of the country, especially to Mexico. And then sure enough, August of 2015, he signed up to go in February of 2016. And he gave you the first opportunity. Not me. I don't know how that worked, but favorite over here. So you went, and then I got my spot. And he always takes two spots in order to take people with him. So you went, and then I went.
Right now, so what did you expect? Not fully, but like, were you feeling a little strange, a little weird, a little like, I don't know what to expect?
The first thing that came to mind when I said I would go, had to get my passport or make sure my passport was current and all that. Honestly, all I could hear was your dad telling me,
oh, yeah.
You don't go to Mexico because if you have no family, you have no business. And him telling me over and over and over that I had no business as a white girl going to Mexico. So that's what I thought at first, and then having to tell your dad.
Well, a little backstory on that, simply because my dad was born in Mexico and he worked customs. And so the stuff that he saw, you don't go to Mexico. You know, you don't go to Mexico. So that was just kind of a running joke because she'd come to town at first. Let's go over to Mexico and go to the restaurants there. It's cheap and all this. And just to get him all worked up. But so that's kind of the backstory on that.
And we were going deep Mexico. You know, we weren't going to Mexico City or big cities, yeah. Which in some ways is probably the better thing to do is to go to the villages. But so that's the first thing I thought. And then I honestly don't think I had any expectation because I don't think my mind could even begin to wrap around. A lot of it was we went to Mexico City in 2008, and I didn't think it would be much different than that, to be honest. I thought we would just work alongside that type of environment, I think.
So when I felt a little bit uneasy, but I don't really know why. Well, when I went, we didn't have as much information. And so I had a lot more, you know, I knew we'd be going to places where it's, you know, you get stopped, you experience this, you get stopped by bandits along the way, but it's part of bandidos. But it's part of what you just do. It's not like a surprise. They think, oh yeah, there they are, there's John and Bob, you know, and so they go over there and they have like a stick of in the ground with nails sticking up so you can't pass by. Like, hey, how's it going? And then they just give them what they give them and they go around. So it's just part of what happens there, you know? And so we knew that part of the places that we would go, that I would go at that time, is people hadn't been before, you know, things like that. So I was a little bit uneasy. I think more than anything, I was worried about, like, don't drink the water. Just like, I didn't want to be sick all week. You know, that was my main thing. But here's the thing is that, so it happened over a course of time. Like, we weren't thinking about going to really Mexico. And it was kind of floated out there, and it just kind of happened naturally. So it wasn't like this thing like, oh, we've been praying, and the Lord just, you know, brought Mexico to mind, or my family had been from Mexico. So no, nothing like that. It happened naturally. We felt uneasy. So I wanted to point out, I think it's the first slide. Yeah. So it's interesting to me because the doors that the Lord opened naturally will not necessarily feel natural to walk through. You know, because it just opens up, it doesn't mean that we're like, oh, that's just natural. That's just easy. I'm just going to walk through it. No, I think a lot of times we're like, I just don't know that I really want to do that. And that's kind of how I felt. I mean, I was fine with it, but I did feel a little bit uneasy. So, sorry, I'm falling apart over here. So let's talk about who you went with. And Wayne, if you show the next pictures, who'd you go with? You don't have to, yeah, just generally.
I went with the main group was from my dad's church in Denison, Southside Baptist Church. They team up with Russell Lipscomb, who is a missionary, a U.S. citizen that has done ministry down there for over 30 years. The picture on the far left is our first year, and then this one here at the long table is from this year. It's usually a group of 17, and so just kind of partner.
And so you went to two different places. Just briefly, just what was unique about each place or different?
The first year we went, we stayed in a town by the name of Chinalo, and then we actually ministered to a village by the name of Yashalumil, and they were very high up, very mountainous region. They had never seen white people. They were a little bit Indian Mexican. They were tribal, so we hiked a long way to get to them, and very interesting there just because they were in awe of just how we looked.
And we'll show pictures in a minute. The second one was more like jungle area and a little more modernized.
I mean, yeah, they went deeper into Mexico, but they were a little more civilized, I guess, if you will. And they were just more modern. They were a new community, so that was the difference. They had some people in their village that had heard the gospel that were believers. They were just a brand new community trying to develop.
Okay. It's kind of funny, you know, so some of your parents have been annoyed by students when they're doing the water flip, you know, with a water bottle, and they try to flip it and land it. I don't know if your experience is kind of annoying. But what's cool, though, is that she was in a place that had never experienced that ever. So she like invented it. They probably named that game after you. So she's in like, you know, I was gonna say the village people. They're probably not called the village people. That's a band, that's a group. But you know, just doing the flip thing. So I know, I thought that was kind of funny. All right, so let's show the next picture, and you can talk just a little bit about what you actually did. Okay, we can look at the, yeah, go ahead and just.
It's harder, it's easier. Every trip is a little bit the same in that you're task-oriented. Your big goal, big to-do for the week, is to build the people a building, a church. They have been meeting just in a spot under some trees, and the desire is for them to actually have a meeting place that keeps them from the elements, that allows them just a lot more space and just a place to worship. You can worship anywhere. But they are just so thrilled that to have an actual place of worship. So you start on Monday. When you get there, the locals have the walls have been formed, and they are just concrete. They've been set in frames that they've made, and it's basically got four walls and cutouts for windows, but there is no roof or anything else to it, and it's concrete color. And as the week goes, you are painting the building, you are pouring concrete, and as you can see on the far side, there's not really, this year they had a mixer, and that's Pasquale down there on the bottom, but you're mixing. I mean, you're 2 years ago, you're digging a hole, and they're carrying 5-gallon buckets and just pouring concrete, level it out, and then everybody's painting. We make benches. They put the roof on. We go ahead and wire for electric, just in hopes that if one day electricity gets there, that they're able to use that. So that's what, and then the ladies all week are doing a vacation Bible school for children and also doing a Bible study with the ladies of the village.
They do both.
But yeah, we work. I mean, we work in the mornings, and then the ladies, we either do a children's thing or a ladies' Bible study.
What's cool is that you don't go there and just do it. You actually partner with them. And so some of you have heard me tell the story about, we went to a place called Naha. And 2 weeks before that, they wouldn't allow anybody in, let alone Christians. And so, but this guy, Pasquale, is the one that went in, and I'll tell you the brief part of it, is that he went in and he tried to build a relationship, and they had 1,000 gods. They're like, oh yeah, Jesus sounds cool, add him to the list. It didn't really work that way. So he wants to serve them, and so he starts helping them with stuff, and he's climbing a light pole, wherever they had electricity at this part. So he climbs the pole, he's trying to rewire something, he gets electrocuted. And he gets thrown off the pole. It's, you know how high they are. He gets thrown off the pole, and they check him, and he's dead. So here's the story, though. The story is that they come over, and they're praying to all their gods and stuff like that. Nothing happens, and they're praying, of course, to the Lord, to those who are with him. And so they take him away, and they're like, man, poor dude, he's dead. You know, that's what a drag. You know? And so they have to drive him, like, hours away. Along the way, he starts showing signs of life. And then he gets to the hospital, more signs of life. He's burned his whole body. He comes back. However it happened, they didn't see any life, but, you know, who knows how that all really played out. He gets to the hospital, and then he can't go out for a month. And then after a month, he goes back, and they see him. They think he's a ghost because the last time they saw him, they thought he was dead. And then they said, you know, I'm not a ghost. And he goes, now let me again tell you about this Jesus. But it's funny because I'm asking him these questions as we're driving, and I've said this before, but it's so funny because he's the most gregarious guy you've ever met. But after he tells the story, he goes, I don't recommend you doing it that way, though. I was like, how do you reach these people that have never been reached? And so I thought that was awesome.
And when you see him, his back is obviously in this picture. There is zero evidence that he was ever burned or anything. I mean, it's amazing because he was dead and very burned, and he does not have any physical limitations, right. No physical characteristics,
nothing.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we know just a little bit about, what are some of the things that why you felt like it was important for you to do this?
I think the first thing I thought was I really wanted the opportunity to do something that was very uncomfortable for me. As much as I love people and doing adventure, it was leaving home for a week. Also really at the time was super motivated to spend time with my dad. We had had a really difficult year in 2015, loss of my stepmom, and so it was good just to be with him, and that was just really what started it, and I thought I could do anything for a week. I wanted a story. I wanted something. I wanted to also be able to show my kids that God will use you, and you may not have a clue how to do it. You may not have a clue where you're headed or how it's going to end up, but you just go and you just do, and he provides and does. And I think, too, to be with people that were very different than me. I try to reach out to others here, but I think, as I've said before, I've always worked with people like me. I've always been around people like me, and I was going to have the opportunity to be around people that were not only didn't speak my language, they didn't look like me, but they had no idea who my Jesus was. And that was going to be And there was a language barrier. First year I went, they didn't even speak Spanish. They spoke an Indian language called Zoxil, so we had double translation. We had to go from English to Spanish to Zoxil, and that's a very long conversation when you're double translating. And even just this past year, I understand Spanish, and I can read it. My speaking is not so great. But to hopefully just have a common language in who the Lord is and try to just get that on a very minimal basis.
You know, and so what we've talked about is how this has naturally happened for us. And so we don't know right now what this is going to mean potentially for even our church, but there are some opportunities that we're considering. And it's funny because when we share it, there have been a number of people. I mean, there was one in our community group said, well, I'm in. Because that's what you do. We've had several people show interest. And so let's put up the next one because we don't know what's going to happen, but we want to invite you into the process of thinking and wondering, you know, early on. And so we're going to talk briefly about some potential opportunities. And so if you want to quickly just talk about maybe Juan Carlos.
Yeah. On the far end, you see Juan Carlos and my dad. And then the middle picture is Juan Carlos and then Carlos in the orange shirt. And every year, it's always just been Carlos as our driver. And he drives our big old 15-passenger vans. And he's an amazing driver because he gets us on the very close edge of cliffs and we don't die. So he's amazing. But Juan Carlos joined us this year. And Juan Carlos is in the ministry program that Russell, the American missionary, started with a group of people a long time ago, and he has been in the program for a year, and he's got another year left. It's a 2-year program, and he's a taxi driver normally. His wife is a stay-at-home mom to 3 kiddos, and he was scraping by to go through seminary, so to speak. He'd already been a year in and had been really struggling. And was really unsure of how he was going to be able to continue for next year, but he really felt like that's what the Lord wanted him to do. And even more so into that, his youngest child, and it's an amazing story, has special needs. He was born dead, his youngest son, who is 7, and now is thriving, but he needs therapy. And Juan Carlos came to the crossroads of...
He said he was born dead, and then he...
Well, he was...
And just revived,
He was revived, yes. He's 7 now. So he's needs a lot of therapy, and Juan Carlos came to the crossroads of, do I continue with seminary and doing what I feel like the Lord really wants me to do, or do I get therapy for my son? And that's a hard decision to make as a parent. So anyways, got to spend, Dad was with Juan Carlos both weeks. I was on week 2. Really got to know him, and the first night I was there, we were at our hotel, which is the picture where Juan Carlos and Carlos are together, and Dad had made the decision to help Juan Carlos and say, I don't want you to have to choose between your son and following the Lord's calling for you. So my dad and his new wife, Sandy, are sponsoring Carlos for the next year. In his seminary, so he gets to finish. And that night at dinner, where that picture is taken with both guys, Russell got to tell Juan Carlos, as we sat across the table from him, that Dad and Sandy were going to sponsor him and that my family was going to tag along in some way on that. And to see a grown man cry and feel like he just absolutely won the lottery was absolutely amazing. And he... was so thankful for the sponsorship, but more than anything, that he actually gets to know and see the face of his sponsor. Because a lot of the guys in seminary are sponsored by people, but they never know who they are. And so...
Well, and then I'll, and for time's sake, you know, so the opportunity there, I mean, it's only $600, I mean, to go to seminary. I mean, total. And for us, it's a little more here, you know. And so, and here's something that's important, because just so you know, if we're ever going to ever sponsor a missionary, they have to be a Cowboy fan. So you, if someone says, hey, would you sponsor us? Yeah. Well, do you like the Cowboys? No. Well, then you're out. I'm sorry.
And just so, really quick, so I just want to tell you the other opportunity up there is where I was at the orphanage the first year. And Elizabeth, Miss Elizabeth, is the one that runs the orphanage, and she has about 90 children. And in Mexico, it's a life of an orphan. They may not be adopted out. I've begged my dad and his attorney ways to find a loophole, and it's just not there. So, but we get to spend that. That's week one. And then down below is the house and the starts of an outdoor kitchen for Rosalinda, who's the lady that cooks for us all during week one. And she had never had a place to even build a fire pit, and we were able to build her an outdoor kitchen. And that last one is just the ladies at Yashalu Mill. I love that picture because that's the kitchen in that community. And I love that it's a community. Everybody comes together to fix a meal three times a day, 7 days a week. And it's just an awesome, awesome experience.
And just the community, you're right, the aspect of it. Let's go ahead and fast forward. We're going to go hit the next one just real quick because we only have a little bit of time left. And so... So, you know, she got to do plenty of stuff. I mean, the Mayan ruins, you know, she got to go under a waterfall to the right, you see that. And then it was kind of neat because the guy on the upper left is the guy that I worked alongside, and I didn't know that they'd be together. But they ended up running into each other, and she was hanging out with her wife. But he's the guy that, she has a cell phone, but we're taking a break after working on the same area, and he started playing a song that I'm like, I know that song, but it was in Spanish. So I started playing our songs in English, and we just kept going back and forth, so it's cool. Now, we don't have time to really go into it, but there's plenty of opportunities and really, really cool stuff. Now, I want to show you the next picture. We're going to tell you kind of something that was really cool for me. All right, so Jason sends this picture. This guy's name is, what's his name?
Rigoberto.
So and so anyway, she sent it to me, and I don't think she even said anything in it, but I looked at that, and I was just like, I said, could it be? You know, because when you do something, oftentimes you don't go back to the same place. Yeah. So it's like on your last day there, it's very emotional because you're like, we're not going to see you again until heaven. People are crying and stuff. And so she sent that picture, and I was like, are you kidding me? So anyway, if you might remember, when I came back, I told a little bit of a story. And the story, at the very last day, I talked about the most hardworking, you know, smile on his face type guy. And it was experienced incredible life change. Let's go to the next slide. And I actually showed this picture. And the picture was of him right there. And I showed this and I said, this guy, I mean, he had tears in his eyes. We're all in the front and we're saying our last words and saying goodbye and we'll see you in heaven and all that. And he was so impacted that he just kind of fell to sit down as he's just looking, and you can't see it that well, but he's tears in his eyes, and it's the same guy. And at first, I was like, it can't be the same guy. I was like, is it the same guy? He's like, I think it's the same guy. And anyway, well, Jason got to talking to him, and she was able to explain to him about the picture. And he couldn't believe that the Lord would use his story in another country in America so far away. And for me, I was like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. And so, you know, and so to me, that just goes to show that you have no idea. I have no idea exactly how the Lord would be able to use us. The impact that we have on an individual, I mean, that can spread across the world and we'll never see it. I mean, we may know it when we get to heaven, but we'll know it.
Well, and he just said, really quick to add to that, it took us kind of two translations for him to understand putting it all together and that we would even speak of him here and that we would share his story. So he was most like doubly impacted that he impacted Ray in that way. Then how good God is that I would meet him in a village far from where he met him last year or 2 years before. And then he just said, you mean in America, people know that I worship and love the same Jesus and God that you do. And we were telling him yes, and tears just started flowing. And he said, translated, little old me in this great big world to be used, I'm honored. And it's very cool.
So what would you say to people that, because we all, you know, that step that God may open naturally, but it doesn't feel natural and we're afraid to take the step. What would you just say? Because we're all in that situation in our everyday life. You know, it's always that just like, don't want to forgive, don't want to be kind, don't want to love, don't want to serve, don't want to step up, whatever it is, you know? And so, I don't know, do you have anything you would say to people just about that step? Because you took a step and now you're able to tell the story.
as easy as it sounds, but as hard as it is, I think you just do it. You've had little things, I'm sure, all along in your life that have been hard to do, and then you did it. I mean, think about my kids jumping off the side of the pool for the very first time. It's like, takes them forever. And then they do it, and then it's repeat, and your arms are tired, and you're tired of them jumping, and they get comfortable and do it. And so whatever little step, and many years ago, I think it was a New Year's message that he had of just start. Start somewhere, and maybe it's just in prayer. Maybe it's speaking what you want to do out loud to somebody, just saying, this is crazy. I don't know anything about it or anything, but I just want to do such and such. And just do it. Just start somewhere, because you're amazed at what you can do and how everything fits together in order to do it. You get to see, as Ray talks about, and I'm sure as you've seen in your own life, is that even, I'm not a journaler. I wish I was, but I would much rather talk than write. Shocking, I know, but I do like to look back, and thankfully so far, I still have a great memory that allows me to go, you know, I remember when I prayed about that, and I remember when I wanted this, or I wanted to see God work, you know, and you know, I've asked for the last several years through a lot of hard and even some really current hard to just show up. He's not answered a lot of prayers that I wanted answered the way that I wanted them answered, but he's shown up in so many bigger ways that I couldn't have even imagined. And I really feel like, especially this last year in Mexico, that he answered those prayers that I had been praying for the last several years in a big way. And it's neat to come full circle. I know it's not over, and I know we don't always get to see the end. But so far, he has been very gracious to me and very sweet to show me the things that I have prayed for. They just look really different.
Right. And so... as far as what this means moving forward, we're not sure. You know, one thing, we want to definitely be a church that's so far beyond the walls that, you know, I mean, we're in the middle of seeking to grow into another space. You know, we're taking those steps and hopefully getting closer and closer. But still, we're talking about potential other opportunities, because it's not all about the people who are part of our church. You know, this week, we had some people come over because one of the Glorieta counselors that's been with us, that we've built a relationship with, she has some opportunities. She came in, and we had some of you out there that know her. And because we want to be about more than just ourselves, you know? And so let's go ahead, we're going to have to wrap up. Let's go ahead and show this last bit. No, there's actually two, but not the last one, the next one. So this is Belen, waiting outside those international, you know, doors right there. And I just think about, I desire to be the type of person, and I fall so short, and I know that you can relate to falling short in that as well. I want to be someone that breaks the ice for my kids so they don't have to someday break the ice on their own. Whether it's about prayer, about the Bible, or whatever. I didn't have anybody going before me that I knew that broke the ice, and it was very difficult. So I want to break the ice. And so, you know, they're seeing this. You know, I think, Clayton, is it next year that there's a good chance you're going to go? Mm-hmm. You know, and he's pretty good in Spanish now because of school. And so it's like, you know, it's interesting. And so let me show you one last thing. Here's the next one. This is the building that they built. Just a building, but it's a building that the church is going to gather. And so when I look at that, I think about how many people are going to hear the gospel for the first time in that building? And it's just a building. You can do anything you want in that building, but people are going to gather, you know, and they're going to sing the way we sing. They're going to take communion the way that we take communion. The same thing. I mean, how many lives are going to be changed? How many marriages reconcile? You know, how many children are going to grow up loving the Lord in just that? So for us, does that mean we help sponsor $600 for 2 years? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, does it mean that when he finally gets his own building that maybe we can go out there and build it, a group of us? I really don't know. But I love thinking about stuff like this, you know, and it helps me think about, you know, we're seeking to go into this new space, you know, and let's say that space becomes our own. And like I said last week, we're getting closer and closer, and it's right there. And we don't even know what's going to happen in that building. We don't know the lives that are going to change, including your own. We don't know, you know, what God's going to do. You know, we don't know the children that are going to fall in love with the Lord. And when they get old enough to make a decision on their own, they're saying, you know what, I'm going to stay with this. Even though I'm now in college, I'm away from my folks, I'm going to keep going because someone broke the ice for me. You know, I don't know. But I would say that, you know, we don't know much longer we're going to meet in this one space. And so these cars are not going to be good for very long. But we do have Easter coming up. And I remember the first people that invited me to come to a church gathering were not believers. It's convicting for me. And they invited me, and I went. I went back a year later, and I've never been the same since. And a lot of the people are an invitation away that we know. The people that, it's that, there's an open door, but it's a natural open door. Here's an opportunity, but we feel unnatural in inviting, unnatural in building the relationship and all that other stuff. And yet the Lord's just saying, come on, man, you have no idea what's on the other end. You have no idea. You don't want to miss on that story.
You know, sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just wanted to say, just to add with that is, you know, it's not about a building. But, you know, one thing that has really struck me the last 2 years, I grew up in a Christian home. I had opportunity. I took full advantage of it when I was at home, and when I left home, I didn't. It took me a long time to come back to it. And I don't think you realize until you've been somewhere like this, and God can use other things too. You don't have to go across the world to do it. But we have a lot of opportunity. Bibles are a dime a dozen. My first year, because they spoke a different language, not even Spanish, they had one Bible that we brought in their language, and they had to share it. And we have the opportunity to read it. We get to worship without persecution. We get to go. We get to serve. We get to do. And I think I did. I used to take it for granted, and I still have to really work at keeping it because we get really, really comfortable. And I think along with what he said is we have the opportunity to invite. We have the opportunity to share the gospel without getting in trouble. So it's just, you realize we have it really, really easy.
Yep, and to close, right, that leads me to say that when you're on mission with people, nothing changes. I mean, nothing will impact you that when you're on a mission with someone and you see God do big things. Like me and Rigoberto and David and then Jason with the same people and then some, when you're done, when your week is done over there, then you look at each other and you're like, I can't believe. I mean, like, that's that picture of that guy. I mean, you just can't believe what he's done. But so it's so much more to be seen that in our everyday lives that if we really learn how, and a lot of us, we're like, I'm not really sure how to do that. If we can really learn to be on mission together as the church, it will change your life. The best things that will happen in your life, a lot of them will happen as a result of that. But we've got to be willing to take that unnatural step. No matter how long we've been here, no matter how short we've been here, no matter anything. But there's nothing like being on a team with other people and experiencing God work. It grows your faith, it grows relationship, it grows your love, and it grows your hope about what's to come. All right, so let's say a prayer. My Lord and my God, thank you for the opportunity to hang out with Jason up here. It's a first for us, and that was, I just enjoyed it. But thank you for your story. I mean, we're telling your story, and these are just aspects of it. And so my prayer is that every single one of us, we just find our place in your story. And part of that is where we are, you know, part of the church, that we are the church, that we are an active member as the body in the body of Christ. And Lord, I feel like we say this type of stuff all the time, and it could be that today it's gripped someone for the very first time. I don't know. But my prayer is, Lord, is that we don't stiff arm the very things that you want to use to change our lives. You know, relationships with others within the church. You know, opportunities to do things with each other and for each other. Life is just too short to miss it while we live it, Lord, so help us to take advantage of it. Put on our heart. Help us to number our days so that we may gain a heart of wisdom, so that we may know that life is short. And so no matter our age, Lord, I pray that we come out here saying, you know what? One thing I know I can do is start. I can start in my school. I can start in my workplace. I can start in my neighborhood. I can start with my family member, with my marriage, with my parents, with my kid, whatever. Help us to just start. And then, Lord, I know that you're saying, all right, you start. You keep following me by my grace, by my spirit, and then just look out and knock your socks off. Thank you, Lord. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.